So, welcome to any visitors who are here. If this is your first time here, we're glad you've made time to worship and be with us. I promise not to keep you long this morning, if you're fearing that. I do wanted to begin this morning by talking about a Greek historian. His name was Anaximenes, and he lived in the 4th century. And he was a contemporary of Alexander the Great, who you may have heard of. But Anaximenes was born in the city of Lampsacus, which is a pretty insignificant place, but a city back in that time on the northwest coast of what is modern-day Turkey. And he accompanied Alexander the Great on his campaigns into Persia. And he was also an instructor for Alexander in the field of rhetoric. So he was his teacher. And as they were traveling and making their way to the east, they were going from one place to another, conquering. And they came to the city of Lampsacus, which was his teacher's hometown. And Alexander already knew what was coming. He knew that Anaximenes was going to come to him and plead for him not to destroy the city, to leave his hands off this town and not destroy it. So Alexander knew that this was coming. He swore that he would not grant his former teacher anything that he would ask, because he was determined to take this city apart. And so the wise Anaximenes heard this. He heard that Alexander had made this oath that he would not give him anything that he asked for. So he approached Alexander and he said to him, "Alexander, I want you to destroy this city." And Alexander was stuck. He couldn't go back on his oath, but he couldn't destroy the city. And so he spared the city because of the very oath that he had made. Psalm 15 describes a righteous person as one who keeps his oath even when it hurts. The Christian scholar and writer C.S. Lewis took that seriously. If you ever read his biography, he talks about the suffering that he endured because he kept a promise that he made to his friend during World War I. His friend was worried about the care of his wife and child if he should be killed in battle. So he made C.S. Lewis promise him that if anything happened to him, that C.S. Lewis would look after his family. And Lewis agreed. So the war dragged on, and sure enough, the man was killed. And true to his word, Lewis took care of his friend's family. Yet no matter how helpful he tried to be, the woman proved to be ungrateful, rude, arrogant, and domineering. And yet through it all, Lewis kept his promise. He kept forgiving her. He refused to let her actions become an excuse to escape from his words of commitment. Are you a person who keeps their word? Is it important to you to do so? Does it matter if your word is good? Or maybe that doesn't matter to you. But if you are a follower of Jesus, it should. Because following the Lord, it is something that he expects of us, that we are people who keep our word and who speak the truth. And so this morning I wanted to turn to a passage in Matthew 5, in verses 33 to 37, where Jesus' followers are told that they are to speak with integrity, that their words matter very much. They are to keep their word, and they are to speak the truth. Now, as light and salt in the world, Christians live in a way that is distinctively different than non-Christians. We live according to the will of God and are to have a righteousness that exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees. Jesus had said this earlier in Matthew 5. But the scribes and Pharisees sought ways to circumvent the commandments and to get what they, and to be able to do what they wanted to do by finding ways around the commandments. And we talked about a couple of these already in Matthew 5. Jesus has talked about anger and murder. And the commandment says, you shall not commit murder. But he told the Pharisees and his disciples, rather, that you cannot be angry with your brother or sister, and you cannot just attack them verbally either, because these are also wrong in God's sight. So you can't get around the commandment by doing those things. And then last week, or 2 weeks ago, we talked about lust and the commandment about adultery. And Jesus says you can't just commit adultery in your mind, mental lust. That you can't get around the commandment by doing that. And he went on, and last week we talked about how you cannot commit adultery by divorcing your spouse and marrying someone else. And we talked about how that had become a pattern, and how some of the rabbis of Jesus' day had really relaxed the rules surrounding divorce and remarriage. And basically some were saying, well, you can divorce and remarry at will. If you don't like your spouse, you can get rid of your spouse and get another one. And Jesus says, no, you can't do that. You can't get around the commandment not to commit adultery by divorcing and then remarrying. You just can't do that. But now he's going to address the truthfulness of our words. And so we read in Matthew 5, verse 33, again, you have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform to the Lord what you have sworn. But I say to you, do not take an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by earth, for it is the footstool His footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not take an oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. Let what you say be simply yes or no. Anything more than this comes from evil. Now, I admit that this is likely this is unfamiliar language to you. And we're going to talk about it a little bit, but this idea of taking oaths by heaven or by earth or taking an oath by your head, what is Jesus talking about? What is all that? I mean, we don't do any of that. Does it have any relevance for us at all as Christians today? Well, it does. And so what I want to do just this morning in the time remaining is two things. One, I want us to understand what Jesus is talking about when he's referring to oaths and taking oaths, and why this peculiar language is here in this passage. So we're going to take a look at what's going on there. And secondly, we want to hear what he is saying to us as his followers. What matters to us as Christians in terms of our own integrity of speech in how we use language. So what is Jesus talking about here? Well, the first question we would ask is, he uses here the word oath. What is an oath? You probably know, you have some idea what an oath is. One definition from a reputable dictionary is, an oath is a solemn, usually formal calling upon God, or if you worship false gods, a god with a small g, to witness to the truth of what one says, or to witness that one sincerely intends to do what a person says they're going to do. So it is invoking God as witness. And so we hear this, maybe one of the more familiar oaths you know of is this one. Do you solemnly swear that you will tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? And you know how it ends. So help you God. Because in that oath, you're invoking God. And the help you God isn't, you're not saying, well, God's going to help me tell the truth. No, this is invoking God as one who is going to judge you, because God knows the truth. And if you lie now, as God is witness, he's going to judge you. You're going to be accountable to him. Okay? And so lying under oath is a serious matter. We call it perjury. And it will get you in a lot of trouble if you perjure yourself. If you take an oath in a courtroom and then lie, and it's found out to be you lied, and you know you were lying, and oh boy, you're going to be in, you've added to your problems in life if you've perjured yourself. But the Lord knows, and so the Lord is invoked in an oath as witness, okay, to whether or not the person is lying or fails to do what they have promised, okay? There is the children's version of an oath as well, right? The children's version. Cross my heart and hope to die. And the rest of it gets kind of disgusting, actually. But I don't know. I remember people saying that. I didn't know what it meant. I know it was powerful. It was a powerful thing you could do. And if you did that as a child, or maybe you do it as an adult, it means you're telling the truth. And if I'm not, let me die. And if I'm not, go find me a needle, you know, and this sort of things. And so you had this, that you're declaring, I am being truthful. But there was, of course, one loophole there. You could escape that if you were stealthily crossing your fingers behind your back. And that voided the whole thing. Then you could laugh at them. Aha, I didn't mean it. You see, my fingers are crossed. A couple weeks ago in Awana, a child reminded me of this. No, my fingers were crossed, Pastor Mark. Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. And I was taken advantage of there in that case. So that's the rules of children. Now, we're going to see that the Pharisees and scribes had some childish rules, too, to get around an oath. They did that. But the Bible commands about oath keeping are many in the Old Testament. And so I'll just put some of them up here. You find them here that the Lord makes it very clear that his people are not to swear falsely. So this idea of taking oaths was something they knew about. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. You shall not swear by my name falsely and so profane the name of your God. I am the Lord. If a man vows a vow to the Lord or swears an oath to bind himself by a pledge, he shall not break his word. He shall do according to all that proceeds out of his mouth. And in Deuteronomy, you shall be careful to do what has passed your lips. For you have voluntarily vowed to the Lord your God what you have promised with your mouth. So you see in Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, and there's more, that the Lord was serious about this. And there's reasons why. This is important. God is holy. His people are to be holy. God speaks the truth. His people are to speak the truth. God is faithful to his word. His people are to be faithful to their words. And so this speaking the truth ultimately will have to do with God's faithfulness and God's truthfulness. And so by not keeping an oath made in his name, they are impugning God's character. And this is one way a person breaks that third commandment about taking the name of the Lord in vain. It has multiple applications, but one of them certainly is this. You make the name of the Lord vain or meaningless by swearing in his name and then not keeping your word. Okay, you've made it meaningless, is what that word means, empty. And the Lord will have none of that. You can't do that. So there are all these commandments, and the scribes and the Pharisees and the rabbis all know this. So like with the other commandments, they tried to find some ways around this. And we see a lot of this in this Matthew chapter 5. They're trying to find ways to get around this. And actually, the Jewish oral law, which we have written down now in a book called the Mishnah, but in the oral law from the time of Jesus, you can read in there that different rabbis will argue or contend which oaths are binding and which are not. And it all depends upon the wording of it. And that's what Jesus is getting at here, this practice which was going on in the first century where people would make a vow or an oath using in a certain language and then say, oh, I don't have to keep it because I said this and I didn't say that. Some rabbis contended that an oath is not binding if it is sufficiently removed from the name of God. So yes, those that have the name of God, clearly those are binding. But if you can remove it from that some distance, then those aren't really binding. Now the person who you're making that oath to or who is hearing that, they may think they're hearing you make a valid oath. But in reality, rabbis would say, no, those are not binding on a person. And they don't have to keep it. So this was a way of getting around the commandment. And we'll see more of this in just a moment. So it's interesting here that the oath taken by heaven or by earth, you actually read these in the oral law, are the ones that Jesus mentions here. Okay? I say to you, do not take an oath at all, either by heaven, because it is the throne of God. This is what he means. Don't take an oath by heaven because you're trying to get out of it. But heaven is the throne of God, and it is directly related to God, or by the earth because it is his footstool. There's a connection there. So earth is far from God. Rabbis would say, oh, you don't have to keep that. Jesus says, no. Those would be binding. Or by Jerusalem, because it's his city. So on all these things, heaven, earth, and Jerusalem, Jesus is saying, are directly connected to God, and these are binding oaths. Okay, apart from what rabbis of the day were saying, that if you swear by those kinds of things, you don't really have to keep it. So that's the background to this language, which seems to us kind of odd and difficult. But what they have done here is kind of what they've done with the adultery commandment. They have turned it upside down, and instead of being a means of ensuring truthfulness, they had made them oaths into ways of lying, justified lying. That's what they've done. They've turned the commandment completely backwards. And the commandment was to ensure truthfulness in an oath. And they've made it possible to be untruthful in an oath. And the rabbis were telling them that this was okay. That they could evade their obligations and lie, and it would be okay. This was the loophole that they created. Later on in Matthew 23, we read about this more. In this passage, Matthew 23:16. Woe to you, blind guides, who say, if anyone swears by the temple, it is nothing. But if anyone swears by the gold of the temple, he is bound by his oath. You blind fools, for which is greater, the gold or the temple that has made the gold sacred? And you say, if anyone swears by the altar, it is nothing. But if anyone swears by the gift that is on the altar, he is bound by his oath. Goes on to say, you blind men, for which is greater, the gift or the altar that makes the gift sacred? So whoever swears by the altar swears by it and by everything on it, and whoever swears by the temple swears by it and him and by him who dwells in it. See, Jesus here again is bringing it right back to God. The thing that the rabbis were trying to do, distance the wording away from God, You can break it. Jesus says, no, you can't do that. Because the Lord dwells in the temple. And whoever swears by heaven, he's actually swearing by the very throne of God. And by him who sits upon it. So Jesus is connecting these things, as we saw earlier in Matthew 5. He is saying you can't play these games with words to justify lying. Of course, we would never do that, right? We probably would. Children do it. Scribes and Pharisees did it. We probably have a tendency to try to do it at times as well. A way to get out of our commitments, to say things that aren't quite true, and then justify it. And so Jesus is saying everything that exists was made by him, so such word games are meaningless. That's part of what's happening in this passage, and that's why there is this thing that may seem unfamiliar to you. The second part of what I want to mention is what Jesus says to his followers. And basically he says this: you have to speak the truth. It's as simple as that. And Jesus actually uses that word. He says, simply speak the truth. Let what you say be simply yes or no. If you start going beyond that, you run into problem. What does he mean? He means that our simple yes or no is to be as binding as if it were followed by an oath. Okay? It's as good as that. We are to be honest, trustworthy, truthful in all of our speech as Christians. I know some people, maybe more so than others, have a problem with that. They tend to lie. They tend to distort the truth. In Jesus' day, though, there was a group of people who were known as the Essenes. And they lived out in the desert wilderness. They lived a really rough life. I could have never been an Essene. I would have lasted about half a day. And I would have said, this is craziness. This is nuts. Why are we living out here? Out in the heat, you know, working all day long. It's terrible. But the Essenes were very devout people. And they took the law of God seriously. And it's interesting that the historian Josephus writes about them. And he says this. He says, the Essenes are distinguished for fidelity and are ministers of peace. Whatsoever they say is firmer than an oath. Swearing is avoided by them, and they regard it as being worse than perjury. For they say that he who cannot be believed without swearing is already condemned and cannot be believed with swearing. That's really good. That's exactly what Jesus is saying, I think. Jesus would say, in this case, the Essenes have got it. They're right on this point. Now, they were off on some other things. Okay. But they were right on this, that they took their words very seriously and they would not get involved with oath taking because they didn't need to take oaths. They were committed to being trustworthy, honest people. And if they gave their word, they were going to keep their word, even if it cost them something. The New Testament writers affirm the importance of truthfulness for believers. Now, there are many reasons why people lie. You know, sometimes people lie to avoid punishment. I didn't do it. I didn't do it. You know, I'm not the one. I didn't do it. Sometimes they lie to avoid embarrassment. Well, I didn't really do that. You know, it wasn't me that happened to. And we don't want to be embarrassed. Sometimes we lie to make ourselves look good. Yes, I did. I'm responsible for that. I'm the one who made that happen. And we want to make ourselves look good to other people, you know, to be esteemed well and to be seen with respect. And if we have to lie, human nature is such that we will do that. We will stretch the truth. We will deny things. Sometimes people lie for financial gain. And there's all kinds of illustrations about that. People lying about the price of something. Or, no, I don't think you paid me for that, but you know they did. And so they lie, and they do it for financial reasons. Greed is a great driver, you know, a great motivator for people, and we have to be careful of it. Greed will drive people to lie, and to lie easily, openly, without any sense of bad feeling, because they're getting something that they really want, more money. And so they're willing to lie about that. Sometimes it's not money, but something else that they want from people, from other people. So they lie. Maybe they want sympathy from other people. So they lie and exaggerate. They feel sorry for me. You know this happened. They lie and go on. So lying is cause for a lot of reasons. I mean, you know, if you think about it, it doesn't take long to realize that lying is kind of natural. You don't have to teach children to lie. They just, no, I didn't take it. You know, there's all kinds of stories about kids, you know, doing things. No, wasn't me. They show up on YouTube and places, you know, kids obviously lying about what they just did. It just happens as a way to protect themselves. They know it young. And what you do have to do is teach children not to lie, to tell the truth. Because it's hard to tell the truth. You have to take the embarrassment, the punishment that sometimes comes with that. But I would say that it seems to me that lying is more and more socially acceptable in our day. People lie, don't think much of it. It's just kind of accepted in a lot of ways that people don't even think about. Oh, yeah, they're lying. Well, so what? Everyone lies. Well, no, wait a minute. Christians don't lie. Followers of Jesus don't lie. That's what he's saying here. No, we don't lie. We don't do that. And so we find this a lot in the Bible, about in the New Testament about this. James, for instance, in James 5:12, almost repeats the words of Jesus. He reiterates them to the church. But above all, my brothers, do not swear either by heaven or by earth or by any other oath, but let your yes be yes and your no be no, so that you may not fall under condemnation of being a liar. James says, when you say yes, it has to mean yes. When you say no, it has to mean no. Your words have to reflect the truth. They can't distort the truth. They can't get around the truth. Any of that is wrong. Paul tells us that truth alone is fitting because lying is part of the old life, the life without God, for unbelievers. In Colossians 3, do not lie to one another, seeing that you have put off the old self with its practices, and you've put on the new self, which is being renewed in the knowledge after the image of its creator. Lying is part of the old life without Christ, without God in our lives. You could lie. People lie. They lie and they maybe don't even feel any guilt or remorse about it. But once you become a Christian, a follower of Jesus, you got to put that off. You have to be done with it. You don't lie to others anymore. That's part of the old, because you're now part of the new self, Paul says. And this new self is being what? What's it being? It's being renewed. It's being transformed. It's being changed towards the image of God more. Now, we all have the image of God, but as Christians, we are being transformed to be more and more godly, more and more Christ-like. So if there's any lying, any distortion of lying, that thing has to go. That has to go out of our life because it doesn't fit with our Creator. God does not lie, and neither should His children lie. See, it's because of who God is. The Bible tells us plainly, God, it's impossible for God to lie. So his children, his followers, the followers of Christ, are not to lie as well. So I don't know if this is a problem in your life. You would know. Maybe it's a problem in your children's life. You'll know that too. It's something we have to direct our children in, but it's something we also have to direct ourselves in, because it's amazing how quickly a lie can roll off your tongue. You almost don't have to think, now how am I going to lie? No, it just sometimes just happens so quickly where you just distort the truth a little bit. And it just comes out, you know, in a way that you know is not right. And now you feel guilty and you didn't really say the truth. You got to go back and deal with all that. So the Lord here says his followers speak the truth. Our words are words of integrity. You know, there's a wonderful book called Horton Hatches the Egg. Have any of you read this book? You should read this book. It's the story of an elephant named Horton who promises to sit on an egg and hatch it for this bird. The bird's name is Lazy Maisie. Now that kind of tells you something right there. So Horton is on this egg as the days go by and the weeks go by, and Horton just keeps sitting there on that nest up in a tree through all the weather and everything, and he's there. And his friends are down there shouting at him, "Come on, Horton, quit that. You don't need to do that. Look, Lazy Maisie's out having a good time. You're a fool for doing this. Get out of there." And Horton says no. And he says this: "I meant what I said. I said what I meant. An elephant is faithful 100%. And so are Christians." Father, we would pray that we would be people who speak the truth, that we would not be people who seek like the Pharisees to find loopholes and make excuses for ourselves for being dishonest, for not following our word. We pray that you would guard us from this, Lord, but that in all of us we'd be able to speak truthfully to one another and to others, and that we would reflect the very nature of God through the words we use. And we ask this, Lord, in Jesus' name.